We're going to move around a little bit today, too, so you guys can stay awake. Y'all with me? All right. No, I'm good. It would be silly to move all y'all. I'll just come back here. Hey, Jackie, I'm gonna be right here, okay? You ready? So you can stay there if you want, but you'll be looking at this side, and this side's way better. So, you know, your call. Your call. So, hey, welcome to Illuminate. Good to have y'all. This is a lower crowd, is there, or is this normal? Okay, very good. We record. Yeah. So, have you guys had aspirations of greatness? Yeah? Yeah? Have you ever just been in your dorm room and you're just lost in a daydream about being awesome? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Some people are like, daydream? No, I'm above that. Then you're dumb, man. I mean, have you ever just been, you know, you're an athlete and you just picture this upcoming tournament and, I mean, you know what I'm saying? And you're just like, you know, go! Right? Or, you know, maybe you're envisioning yourself like with massive skills on your axe and you can wail on a guitar like nobody's business. You know what I mean? That's ingrained. That's a healthy thing. To have these kind of daydreams, these kind of aspirations, that's a good thing. This microphone's not a good thing. I know that's ingrained in us. Even from a young age. I mean, when I was a kid, I'd play in my cousin's fort, and that was when G.I. Joe was cool the first time, right? And so we are saving the day, you know, we're fighting Cobra Commander, and I mean, it's real. We are awesome at what we do. We are saving all the hot chicks because, well, that's what boys do in their daydreams. So that's what we did, man. And, you know, I wanted to be someone that mattered, right? That's just ingrained in us all the time. So whether it's in sports or music or theater, no one wants to stink at what they do. I mean, we all have within us a compulsion to be excellent at what we do. And it just seems like life is what begins to erode that. Not what's innate within us. What's innate within us is a desire to worship, a desire to excel at the stuff we do. But man, it's the opposition that begins to grind that down. That we begin to compromise our dreams, our aspirations. That's a shame, isn't it? It's a shame that, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to, you know, fight Cobra Commander initially, but you know, I wanted to play for the Dallas Cowboys, right? I mean, I had my big socks that I'd stuff my pants down into my socks, you know, because I thought that's what the Cowboys, I didn't realize their pants only came down to here. I thought they had to stuff them into their socks, but it didn't matter. And I wanted to play for the Dallas Cowboys. I got a little older and realized that I was a white oaf and that wasn't going to work. And so I wanted to do something that mattered, whether it was, you know, I wanted to be a firefighter for a while. And, you know, I just watched Backdraft. It's this firefighting movie. And I wanted to kick down doors and rescue babies from the fire, right? I mean, I wanted to matter. I wanted to be great. And then, you know, by the time, you know, we're in high school, we're like, well, I want to be in middle management. Yeah. And by the time we're in college, I'm like, I'm going to try and be a registered voter and not get arrested, okay? I'm aiming high here. But I want to talk about greatness this morning. I want to rekindle that fire that God has put in you to matter, to excel at the stuff that you do. Because when you excel in your sport, you honor God. When you excel in academics, you honor God. When you excel in whatever it is, in being a good friend and an encourager, or a great CPA, or whatever, you honor God. And I want to rekindle that that aspiration for greatness. I love history. I'm a big history buff. Any of you guys enjoy history? I am launching my son into nerddom. When he and I hang, we're like, let's go watch some documentaries, Dad. I'm like, that's my boy. We're going to go watch documentaries. My wife goes, he doesn't stand a chance with you. He is going to be a permanent nerd. Yes, he is. But man, I love history. I love the stories of great men. I love, and women and the road that they took to get to where they are. I love museums. I take my son to different museums where they have the headphones, you know, and the commentary, and you press whichever button corresponds with that station. And he will go for hours. He outdoes me. Even I can't hang with commentary that long. And so we went to the Admiral Nimitz Museum, which is an awesome World War II Pacific era museum in Fredericksburg. And he's in there for 4 hours, and finally my wife is just grabbing him by the ear. We're leaving! We're going shopping! Quit it! He learned that from me because I love the stories of Admiral Nimitz or General Patton and how they became who they are. I love the stories about Martin Luther, you know, the father of the Reformation, and the path that he took, the opposition that he overcame to accomplish the stuff that he did. I love the stories of Alexander the Great and the ancient antiquities, right? And there's a quote that says, when Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer. The dude died at like 30 years old. How did he conquer the known world by the time he was 30? That's incredible. And so I love learning about those stories. There's a story in the Bible, in the book of Mark is where I'll look at it at this point. James and John are Jesus' disciples, and they had aspirations of greatness. You may remember James and John, these guys were called the Sons of Thunder, right? I mean, they could have been WWE wrestlers with that kind of moniker, you know? The Sons of Thunder? That's intense. And so anyway, these guys were walking with Jesus and walking with the disciples. I'm going to read out of Mark 10. As soon as I find it here. Mark 10 and verse 35. And they were on their way to Jerusalem. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." How about that, going up to God and saying, "Hey, God, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "Okay, yes, sir. What would you like, disciples?" "We want you to do for us whatever we ask." And they replied to him, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in glory." "Well, you don't know what you're asking," Jesus says. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered. And Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at my right or my left is not for me to grant. Now, those places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." What's interesting here is the disciples are having this argument. So they're walking along with Jesus from Jerusalem, and they're having an argument about who's the greatest. So they're sitting here with the guy who created the entire universe, right? And they're arguing with each other about who's the greatest. And so they're squabbling, and the other disciples overhear James and John come up to Jesus with this request. "Hey, Jesus, you mind if when we get to heaven, can we be your guys? Can one sit here and one sit here? We want to be your guys in your kingdom." Well, the other disciples are like, what are they saying? What? What, James and John? I'm the one that Peter called out of the, I'm the one that went up in the mountain of transfiguration. And they have this argument about who is the awesomest disciple while they're standing next to God himself. Doesn't that seem a little ironic to you? And they're having this discussion. And I'll pick up in verse 41. When the other 10 disciples heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. And Jesus called them together, and he said this, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. Their high officials exercise authority over them, but not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be a slave of all. Even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." See, James and John wanted to be great. But here's what I want to point out. They wanted power, they wanted prestige, and Jesus doesn't blast them for that. I want you all to catch that. He says, we want to be great in your kingdom. And Jesus doesn't say, oh, no, that's not what you should want. Don't desire greatness. Instead, what he does is he redefines what greatness is. He says, you want to be great in my kingdom? Okay, here's what it looks like. You know, the Gentiles, when they're people of authority, they lord it over others. But that's not what greatness in the kingdom looks like. Instead, here's what it looks like. And so there's this totem pole of importance, this totem pole of power that the world has set up. And these people are on the bottom. And then you have the worker bees. And then you have the middle managers. And then you have the upper echelon. And then you have the executives on top. And you have this idea that to come up this totem pole of greatness, you are rising upon the shoulders of others. You are rising above the opposition. You tracking? Pretty simple stuff. What Jesus does is he takes this totem pole of greatness and he turns it on his head and he says, you want to be great in my kingdom? Here's what it looks like. Even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. He says, you can aspire to greatness, but here's how you do it. Here's how you're going to achieve that. So many of us want to be great in God's kingdom. You might not have said it that way. You might not have gotten out of your bed saying, Lord, how can I be great for your kingdom? But I think all of us want to be strong disciples of Christ who listen to his spirit and obey. Am I right? No one wants to stink at being a Christian. Or at least, that's what we say. That's how we feel. But I want to ask you, have you considered God's economy? Have you considered what greatness in his kingdom looks like? And let me ask you this. Have you ever experienced those times of acute spiritual dryness? Not cute, acute, sharp, poignant, significant spiritual dryness in your life? You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever just been depressed in your spirit? You know? Have you ever been in maybe you've been praying and you're like, I'm talking to myself here. This prayer is going boing, bouncing off the ceiling, right back at what is going on here? Have you ever, you know, you've been maybe, you know you should read scripture, and so you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. Okay, whatever. Have you been there? Yeah? No? No? You're like, I'm a heretic. Yeah? No? Okay, we're all heretics? Okay, good. At least we can be heretics together. If you haven't, you will, but my guess is every one of us have had times of spiritual depression where we're just going, you know, I believe in God. I sure don't sense him right now. I'm sure not feeling it. And here's the deal, guys. Christian college students are particularly susceptible to this condition that I'm talking about. You might think it's the opposite, but I'm telling you, you guys are susceptible to the spiritual funk that I'm talking about. Why would that be? Why you guys? Why do you think you would be particularly susceptible to this? That's good. He said you're actively searching for that relationship, and when you don't find it, you are acutely aware. Not acute, that's different. Acutely, poignantly, significantly. Yeah, that's good. That's real good. Actually, I hadn't considered that element, but yeah, that's exactly right. Why else? I'm giving you all this as a caution, by the way. Christian college students. Ivan?
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to a wall. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Right.
Yeah.
It's that expectation sometimes that it's our, it isn't necessarily that, it's our expectation rather than, like, you know, to
have faith and keep on going.
Yeah, that's good, Ivan. Yeah, Dylan?
I've had that issue before when I was going to Bible college. And my issue was, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but it was more of, oh, I read my Bible for homework, so I don't need to do it anymore.
Right.
Or, oh, we went over in class today, so I read my Bible for today already, so I don't need to do it at home. Or, like, I don't know the words of how to explain it, but you know what I'm trying to say, right? Like, you do it so much in class or at school, and you're in the word constantly.
Yeah, Dylan, and the danger in that, and you're exactly right. The danger is your scripture becomes your textbook, and it really becomes reduced to a textbook. So, Dylan, you're exactly right. That, well, I've done my study, I had a memory verse, and so I memorized this stuff for that quiz, and we'll call that spiritual pursuit. We're good here. Yeah, that's a real danger that students of the Bible fall into. That theologians fall into is that their academic pursuit replaces their spiritual pursuit. Okay, I want to caution y'all against that. I mean, we focus and we study the word a lot here, right? And when we fail to apply it, well, there's those seeds of hypocrisy that become real evident to us, right? And we fail to apply the stuff that we're learning. So, you know, we hear about power or peace or fulfillment or contentment or life to the fullest. And when our life doesn't measure up, there's that real stark contrast between what we're living and what we're studying. Actually, be like this. What we're studying and what we're living. And you're exactly right. When it doesn't measure up, it's that much more poignant. And we're often saturated by spiritual talk and spiritual giants and spiritual energies. And the deal is, a lot of times we fail to release that same kind of power. Right? And it's like this, guys. A lot of times we experience this, the spiritual constipation. Sounds kind of gross, right? That's because it is. Listen, when you eat and eat and eat, and you don't release, what happens? Yeah, you're constipated, you know, right. You're bloated, you're nasty, you get sick. It's exceptionally uncomfortable. I don't mean to be gross just for the sake of being gross, but listen, if you are taking in, if you are consuming spiritual truth, if you're consuming the Word, if you're consuming the things that you're learning about the Spirit here, but you're not releasing that into the world and releasing that energy around you, guess what? Your body is a picture of what your spirit does. And you stagnate in your spirit. You begin to become bitter, resentful, and stagnant within. So I often speak to students who are going through these natural slumps that I'm talking about. They have that spiritual funk. They're like, man, it's not like I'm an atheist. I still believe in God, but shoot, I'm not feeling it anymore, man. I'm trying to pray. I'm doing my quiet time. I have a dedicated time, but man, I don't feel the power. I feel like I'm in a slump. And so my first question to that student or that person is always the same. It's, where are you serving? Where am I serving? No. I'm talking about, I'm not feeling it anymore in my spirit. I'm talking about, I need life from the Word. Yeah, where are you serving? Where are you pouring out? Where are you releasing that that energy? See, here's the deal, guys. I want y'all to understand, depression is a very selfish thing. Did y'all realize that? When you're going through depression, you're asking, what's wrong with me? Why am I so messed up? Why is all this happening to me? Why can't I get it together? Do you understand? Depression is a very selfish thing. When you're in that low, when you're depressed, where do all your attentions focus? On yourself. And what's wrong with me? Okay? But when you serve and when you pour into others, the focus is no longer on you, it's outside of you. And the very act of service, the very act of considering others' needs instead of your own, dismantles that what's inherent in depression, that selfishness that's inherent in depression, just by simply focusing not on you, but on others. So my encouragement when you're going through that funk, when you're going through that difficult time or that depression, is consider where you might focus your energy and your attention on others, and where can you be serving? I want to continue our talk, but we're going to take a walk outside. By the way, we were scheduled to have Dana Mingo speak today, and she called in sick. So I take my students outside for the session every time, and I was talking to Mark Worley. I was like, the weather is beautiful. I want to do it today. So I want to take you guys outside, and we're going to finish up our session. So gather all your stuff. We won't be coming back here. We are going to the area that's between Newland Hall and the gym, and I'll catch you guys out there.